Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Mars. The Affordable Care Act, which many call Obamacare, reaches a major milestone at the end of this month. The opportunity to apply for 2014 coverage under the ACA is March 31st. Open enrollment for coverage in 2015 does not begin until the fall. Millions are eligible to purchase insurance this year through state and federal exchanges. There are penalties if those who qualify don't apply. It's important to know what to do, how to do it, and why to do it before the end of the month deadline. Here to talk about navigating the health care exchanges before March 31st are Professor Sidney Watson of St. Louis University's Health Law Policy Center. Nancy Kelly is Director of Engagement and Advocacy with the St. Louis Effort for AIDS. Jeremy Malarski is Navigator Program Manager with Primaris, which, among other things, provides insurance counseling services. He joins us by phone from Columbia. Thanks, folks, for being with us. Nice to see you all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Don.
It's good to be here.
This is an important program. The deadline looms. I alluded to it, Sidney, in the introduction. Give me your take on the significance of this deadline.
Well, it's 19 days and counting to go to the marketplace and shop for and get health insurance. This is the first time we've been through the process. We still know a lot of people don't know that there are new opportunities out there. So we're all happy to be here today to try to get the word out better.
A lot of people don't know there's a deadline.
That's right.
Yeah.
This open enrollment period works the same way those of us who have employer-sponsored insurance get our insurance. There is a period of time you have to sign up, and when that March 31st date passes, you will have to wait until November 15 for another open enrollment date. There are some special reasons you can sign up outside the open enrollment date, like having a child or getting divorced or getting married. But for most of us, you need to sign up during the open enrollment.
I understand the administration is hoping to sign up another 4 million people or so between now and that deadline. Given the problems that the government website had early on, is it possible to sign up that many, do you think? Nancy, maybe you can answer this. Is it possible to sign up that many people in 19 days?
It is physically possible. There's no secret that the website, the healthcare.gov, started off slowly. There were lots of problems to begin with. But we have certified application counselors that are assisting people every day, and the website is working. Sometimes it takes less than an hour to get in, look at all your options, and enroll. So whether or not you use an assister, again, physically, yes, we can get to the goal. I believe that the stated national goal is 6 million total.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah.
I stand corrected then.
So, yeah, we're just over 4 million now, and they're looking to try to hit the 6 million mark.
All right. And, Jeremy, give me your perspective on all of this and how it's going for you.
Well, Don, I think it's important to realize that this is the first open enrollment period in a completely new system, one that fundamentally changes the landscape of American health care. We have thousands of Missourians who are going to be eligible to buy plans they normally would be completely priced out of. If you are earning, or an individual, all the way up to about $45,000, there typically will be some help for you to buy these plans. Assuming that you don't have access to other forms of affordable insurance, such as, you know, Medicare or a job-sponsored coverage. So a lot of people, I think, if you look at some of the studies that have been done, the reason why they're hesitating up until this point is they don't think the plans will be affordable. And many people are finding when they take a closer look, when they look at their income, when they look at the plans that are out there, they're pleasantly surprised.
You know, a lot of people, from what I have been reading, Jeremy, think that this deadline is likely to be extended, as so many others have been.
We've gotten no official word of that. That said, we have seen some evidence in the past couple months. As you know, you sign up by the 15th of that month, and then your insurance is affected the following month. So folks who signed up by February 15th, they saw their insurance kick in on March 1st. If you signed in on the 16th of February, your insurance didn't kick in until April 1st. That said, when there were people who were attempting to sign up on the 15th but were not able to finish, there was some grace period extended to them where they were able to finish the next day.
Cindy, I can't imagine what the reaction would be if, in fact, this deadline were extended.
Well, the administration has said there'll be no more major changes between now and March 31st. They have indicated there may be some tweaking. So I think the question is whether an extension of a week or a few weeks might be considered a tweak. Mm-hmm. I think the other question is whether the website keeps working and what the traffic looks like. If we see a last-minute surge with a lot of people trying to get through the website and some glitches or delays, I wouldn't be surprised if the administration extended the deadline for a short period of time. On the other hand, at some point we do need to wrap up the enrollment period.
Yeah, and I think it's important to just clarify for our audience that we're not saying that this is going to be extended at all. It's very important to know that there is a deadline, and until further notice, that is the deadline.
Absolutely. Now's the time to go and look. You can window shop, get an idea of what your premium choices are and what your premium pricing will be without having to commit. And then if you're ready to sign up, you can go in, create an account, make an appointment with some of the navigators or certified application counselors like Nancy's and Jeremy's group if you want to talk to somebody one-on-one.
The thrust, as I have been told and as I've been reading, has been to sign up as many young people as possible and make this whole thing work. That is very necessary. Nancy, what are you finding with regard to the young signees?
Actually, the numbers are looking pretty good in the state of Missouri. The last statistic I heard was about 30% of the people who are purchasing insurance through the marketplace in Missouri are of that younger demographic, which I believe is the age group of 18 to 34. So that is a healthy chunk. I think that the officials would like a little bit higher of a percentage, but 30% is not bad. Again, to underscore what Sydney and Jeremy said, people are consistently pleasantly surprised by the options that they have and the cost that they have in terms of premiums and lower out-of-pocket costs.
Jeremy, is anything special or in particular being done to reach out to the young people?
Well, our program, all the Navigator grantees actually are funded to help people who are in what we call vulnerable populations, so people who might not necessarily speak English as their first language, people in rural areas, and people who might be not necessarily might have special needs. So, you know, we see a different population than you might see among people who are enrolling as a whole. That said, I would say that probably since the end of December, we've seen an increase in the young folks that come to see us. A lot of young families who had no idea that there were programs to help them cover their children before the marketplace even started, namely the what's called the Child Health Insurance Program, or CHIP. We have seen scores of families that had no idea that that existed and that there had been affordable coverage for their children in that way. So I think that the folks that are seeing that we're seeing have changed a bit. But that the data that Professor Watson and Nancy are talking about with the 30%, that's going to be playing out as a whole in our state.
30% enough, Sydney?
We hope so. The push for young people is that the more people we sign up, the higher the percentage who are young and healthy, the lower the costs will be. On the other hand, the most important people to get signed up are those who need health care and need medical care now. We want to make sure and reach those folks. As Jeremy says, if they're in rural communities where they don't have access to the internet or speak English as a second language, those are folks who need a doctor visit now, this year. And we want to make sure they've got access to these new good health insurance options.
You know, Nancy, it's really hard to believe that there are so many people out there who apparently don't understand what's going on so many different levels. This has received an awful lot of publicity in the last years, actually, the last couple of years. Your thoughts on that?
Well, frankly, there are some folks who would like to see the law not succeed. So putting that aside, we are working, and a lot of people are working in the state of Missouri. There's an organization called Cover Missouri, the Cover Missouri Coalition, that has over 400 members. And we are working to give out accurate information. A lot of times it's word of mouth and one-on-one, but going to church groups and going to businesses and really getting out correct information. Jeremy mentioned the tax credits, those discounts. There was a recent Kaiser poll that said 54% of the uninsured folks out there do not know that there are tax credits to help. So there's really some important information that's maybe not getting out there as much as it needs to be.
And Jeremy, we've talked on this program in prior sessions about the people who actually have signed up and who've taken advantage of those portions of the ACA that have already gone into effect seem to be very happy with it.
We've seen that as well. I can tell you anecdotally, we have helped several families find coverage that they normally would just flat out not be able to afford. I recently saw a young woman who came to us for help. She's 20 years old, works a couple part-time jobs. She's going to be paying $20 a month for her insurance. Her deductible is only a couple hundred dollars. There are people who are really benefiting from this, and we're seeing a lot of them. That said, we have some work to do, as Nancy and Sydney mentioned, in terms of educating people about how all this works. You know, this is the uninsured population, so a lot of folks have never had insurance before. They may not know that there's a monthly fee that they pay just to have the insurance, that there might be a deductible, which is the amount of money you pay before your insurance actually kicks in terms of health care costs. So there's what's called the health literacy initiative going on here to help people understand why all this is important and how this affects them, both in terms of their family's health and in terms of their family's budget.
But, Sydney, have there been a number of people who have complained that the cost of their insurance has gone up?
Well, we heard a lot of concern about that when some of the old policies were canceled back in December, or people got notices of renewals that didn't include these new premium tax credits. So they didn't have an understanding of what their actual costs would be. Mm-hmm. The people we've talked to who've actually gone to the marketplaces and seen the prices there have been very pleased. One of my law students, Nathaniel, and his wife, Rebecca, they were very happy to get coverage for them at $42 a month. It's a policy they picked out partly because it includes eyeglasses, and they both need glasses each year. They hope that Nathaniel will be getting a job when he graduates in May, and they expect their premiums to go up when he gets that job, but it's just perfect for what they need now.
How much choice do these potential customers have in selecting insurance policies?
Well, here in the St. Louis area, there are 22 policies available that people can choose from. They range from bronze plans, which have higher out-of-pocket costs, to gold plans, which have lower out-of-pocket costs and premium variations. And we see people picking the plan that best meets their needs. I also know a woman, Diana. She is an early retiree in her 60s who has been looking for health insurance, and she lost her employer sponsor. Insurance. She's very happy with the policy she selected. Hers is $74 a month, but she wanted a very low deductible and very low co-payments. So again, there's the choice. What matches your needs, your health status, your present situation?
Jeremy, is there a favorite plan as far as you're concerned in terms of way people are responding to you?
It depends upon where they fall on the income scale, Don. There are actually two financial assistance programs. One of them helps you with the monthly cost, and the other one helps you with the out-of-pocket cost. And the eligibility for the first one, for the premium help, that tends to be fairly wide. If you earn between, for an individual, if you earn between roughly $12,000, a little less than that, to roughly $45,000 a year, then you get some help with your premiums. Now, if you are in another population, if you are between 1 and 2.5 times the poverty level, then you can get help with your out-of-pocket costs. So I bring that up because if you are one of those people, again, you earn roughly about $17,000 a year, then you can get your deductibles come down considerably, and so people tend to choose plans accordingly. So which plan gives me the most value for what I'm putting into it? That said, statistically speaking, silver plans, which are kind of in the middle of what Sydney was just talking about, between the bronze and the gold, they strike a balance between premium costs and out-of-pocket costs. Those tend to be the ones that we're seeing elected the most in Missouri.
And Don, the numbers that came out yesterday about enrollment tell us that 80% of people who are purchasing plans on the marketplace are getting these premium tax credits to help them with the costs.
Yeah. We want to get a little more specific about credits and subsidies and also penalties in just a moment. But let me first remind our audience that you are listening to St. Louis on the Air. I also want to take a call. Scott has been holding on from Chesterfield, and I want to get him into the this part of the conversation. So, Scott, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah. I signed up for Obamacare, and my premium is $60 a month after the subsidy. My deductible is like $500 or $600 a year, and I got the card. You know, it took time, but I got the card. And I use it at the pharmacy and the doctor's office, and so far it's working just as well as my old insurance, which, was outside of healthcare.gov. That, the deductible for my old insurance was $3,000. The premium was $230. And when I canceled the old insurance, they still tried to take $400 out of my bank account. So, Also, according to Gallup, the uninsured rate has fallen to its lowest level since 2009. But unfortunately, a lot of people in the state of Missouri are not going to be able to get, working poor people are not going to be able to get the subsidy or Medicaid because the state legislature won't expand Medicaid. So, because we got a bunch of boneheads running the state legislature.
Let me just reinforce that those are your words, Scott, and not ours, whether we agree with you or not. But thank you so much for the call. Nancy, what about this problem that he ran into, and what kind of problems are surfacing?
Sure. Well, thanks, first of all, Scott, for calling and for taking the initiative, getting yourself that coverage. Sounds like it's really worked out well for you. I do want to make a clarification. I know the Affordable Care Act is referred to as Obamacare, and, that is perfectly fine. It's a good shorthand. The clarification is that Obamacare is not a coverage plan. It is a system to get private insurance. And so I think that needs to be stressed. You may be buying United Healthcare, Coventry, Blue Cross Blue Shield, but they're familiar private insurance plans. So I think that's an important distinction. Scott's other point about there are several hundred thousand folks that are going to be left out of this whole process. And those are people who fall into what could be called the Medicaid gap. And those are people who do not make too little money to where they can qualify for current Medicaid coverage, which is less than $4,000 per year. And they don't make enough money to qualify for all of these discounts and tax credits we've been talking about, because that begins at 100% of the poverty level, which is, as Jeremy said, around $12,000. So these folks are some of our lowest income. And if they purchase insurance, they would have to pay full price, because the intent of the Affordable Care Act is for several pieces to fit together. One is the tax credits in the marketplace. Another is Medicaid expansion. So Medicaid would expand up to meet where those tax credits start, and then those people can get their coverage through Medicaid. Currently, the legislators in Missouri are working on this issue. We are confident they will see the issue the way a lot of us do, that it would help out a lot of people and increase the health benefits for all of Missouri.
Sydney, if in fact the legislature does approve Medicaid expansion, and there's no guarantee, given past performance, that that is going to happen, but if they went ahead and passed it during this session, would those people who are now brought back into the fold be eligible to jump into the system right away, or would they have to wait until 2015?
Well, it would depend upon when the legislation becomes effective here in Missouri. If it passes in this session, I hope that by January 1, 2015, we will have the Medicaid expansion in hand. It will depend upon whether there are any conditions attached to the expansion by the state. In terms of the federal government, the money is there. The money's available. It's funded 100% by federal funds for this year and next year should we decide to expand.
All right. Our subject today is the new Affordable Care Act, which some people are calling Obamacare. And as one of my guests, Nancy Kelly, just pointed out, Obamacare is not an insurance policy. It is sort of shorthand for the Affordable Care Act. Nancy Kelly is with me in studio. You just heard from Professor Sydney Watson of St. Louis University, joining us by phone from Columbia's Jeremy Malarski, a Navigator Program Manager with Primaris. We'll be back to continue the conversation in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We continue our conversation on the Affordable Care Act, and we're putting special emphasis on what has to be done to sign up before the March 31st deadline. That is a hard deadline, and you have to move quickly in order to get in on this insurance coverage. Before we continue that conversation, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. The St. Louis Board of Aldermen's Tourism Committee is considering a proposal to allow a major music festival to set up shop in downtown St. Louis. This comes after the organizer of the Blues Week Festival and Taste of St. Louis announced the moval of these festivals from St. Louis to Chesterfield. The current proposal for a multi-stage music festival on both Memorial Day and Labor Day weekends has drawn controversy in part because of a non-compete provision. There are 13 different budget bills before the Missouri State Legislature today. Marshall Griffin is following the hearings that could impact possible Medicaid expansion and the discussion about the education budget, where funding for Normandy schools is in question. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our discussion with Professor Sydney Watson of St. Louis University, Nancy Kelly, Director of Engagement and Advocacy with the St. Louis Effort for AIDS, and joining us by phone is Jeremy Malarski, Navigator Program Manager with Primaris. I want to invite our listening audience to get into this conversation, too. There's much to talk about. If you have specific questions, these are the folks here with me to answer them. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org, and we will be happy to take a tweet at STL on air. Now back to the discussion. Sydney, I'll turn back to you because this is something I heard in the radio this morning I had not heard before, and maybe it's my fault, but we put a lot of emphasis in the discussion about penalties on the fact that people would be looking at a $95 penalty if, in fact, they are eligible and they don't sign up by March 31st. Then I hear Julie Rovner on NPR this morning saying, well, actually, it could go as high as $11,000 for a family of four. I've never heard figures like this associated with it.
Well, in the first year, the penalty is 95% or 1% of income per adult in the family, depending upon which is higher. And we usually hear that default of $95 a month. So if you're a single person earning $40,000 a year, you could be looking at a $400 a year penalty. That comes out to be $33 a month. What we know is that same person earning $40,000 a year for $33 a month could probably get a pretty good choice of plans. Mm-hmm. So it's both a meaningful penalty, but also a reminder that we have affordable options available.
Right. Well, Julie Rovner quoted Linda Bloomberg, a senior fellow at the Urban Institute's Health Policy Center. And just to capsulize what she said, the cap is tied to the cost of the national average bronze level insurance plan. This year's top penalty could be $3,600 for an individual and $11,000 for a family of four.
Right,
11,000. I don't see how that's possible. $11,000, you would have to be in the percentage category, which means it would have to be 1% of your income after the filing threshold. So for a family, the filing threshold is $20,000. In order for you to for 1% of your income after the filing threshold to be that much, to be $11,000, you have to be earning more than $1 million that year. That would be extremely, extremely rare, and that's your taxable income.
Yeah, Jeremy's better at the math than I am on the fly, but you'd have to be a very high-income family. And those are income levels where very, very few people are uninsured.
See, this is part of the overall problem, in the fact that media coverage is saying things like this and startling people without the supporting figures to go along with it. I think a lot of people were stunned, as I was, to hear figures like that. But can we just tamp that down a little bit and say, really, for most people, what?
For most people, the tax penalty is a nudge. Mm-hmm. People are going to start seeing it next year on their income tax returns and are going to need to make a decision for themselves whether they want to pay that money in taxes or whether they want to use those dollars to purchase the new health insurance that's available through the marketplace.
Right. Thoughts, Nancy?
Yes, and I guess one of the things that gets lost in the tax penalty discussion is not only are you paying money for nothing, you're just paying a penalty, but you're also left out of having health insurance. And when people think about cost and how much is this going to be out of my pocket, it's really not helpful to compare to sort of zero, but more of, you know, am I going to have to go to the med stop this year? Am I going to have to go to the ER? What if I get in a fender bender and have to, you know, get some medical care? So when you're comparing costs, you've got that unknown of what are my health costs going to be without insurance? And frankly, we don't want to be worst case scenario thinkers for the most part. But in this situation, the reality is healthcare costs are the major, a major, if not the major, driver behind family bankruptcy. And so even though you think nothing's going to happen, sometimes it does. And so, you know, you kind of would look back and say it might have been better to go ahead and get that health plan. And again, that's not the stance we usually take, that scare tactic, but it is a reality for a lot of people.
You know, I saw something in the paper the other day about a prominent personality here I won't mention the name, here in the St. Louis area, who stepped out of his car, fell, and broke his neck. And it was just one of those things that happens, and it can happen to an 18-year-old. And if that happens to an 18-year-old, the hospital bill could be $100,000. Correct? I mean, this is the thing that younger people aren't really taking into consideration today, that kind of a bill could all of a sudden jump up and bite them big time.
But we also know that young people have parents and grandparents, and they've seen unexpected things happen to them. I think one of the things we're seeing at St. Louis University at the law school is, first, our students getting the benefit of being able to stay on their parents' plan, which is part of the Affordable Care Act. And then as they age out, they have been signing up for marketplace plans. They want insurance. They want peace of mind. They understand the value of it. It's just that up until this year, they didn't have affordable options available if there was an employer-sponsored insurance offered to them. Yeah. So it's a new world. As Jeremy said earlier, it's the first time we've gone through this new enrollment in this new world.
Sure. Well, I mentioned that particular scenario just as a case in point why it's important for, obviously, these young people to become involved. I have a long email here. I'm going to have to read most of it, I think, for it all to make sense. It's from Jay, who says, I have a very serious pre-existing condition. I signed up for health coverage via the ACA and chose a plan I thought my physician was a part of. After I paid my first premium and received my insurance card, I discovered that I had indeed mistakenly signed up for a plan that my doctor is not a part of. Due to my pre-existing condition, it would be very difficult to change physicians as I require frequent blood work and follow-up visits, plus daily specialty medication. The insurance company told me that they would let me change plans, but that I had to go through the exchange. When I called the exchange, I was told that I could not change plans since I had already paid my monthly premiums. I am really stuck paying for a plan that doesn't include my physician. Who'd like to take that one on? Jeremy?
Well, there, There is a clarification on this, and we're kind of getting a little bit into the a little bit into very special details. But there was a memo that was put out by Health and Human Services on February 6th that said there is some flexibility if you can find a plan that's on the same metal level by the same insurer. You've already enrolled, and the reason why you're changing is for the reason being described here, that it's to move to a plan with a more inclusive provider network that you can request that of your insurer, and that is allowed. But unfortunately, we're hearing a lot of these cases, more and more as the enrollment period starting to close, and more people are getting enrolled. It is just fundamentally important to look at the actual provider network and the formulary, in other words, the medicines that are covered by the plan that you're about to choose, particularly after you completely enroll. And completely enroll means paying that first premium and going through with that first payment.
All right. Anything to add, Sydney?
Well, I think what's important that Jeremy said in advice here for Jay is he needs to work this out with the insurance company by switching plans that they offer to a plan with a broader group of physicians so he can get his physician covered.
How agreeable are the insurance companies to work with through all of this? Do you have any idea, Nancy?
Well, we are seeing a lot of folks. The particular population that we have worked a lot with are people who are living with HIV/AIDS and are in the Ryan White Care program. And through that program, they have case managers. So our staff as certified application counselors have been working with the case managers and get a little bit more information sometimes about what happens next after someone enrolls. And by and large, the insurance companies are being as helpful as they can be. I know a number of them have added staff to answer the phones and to process orders. But we're talking about 75,000 new enrollees in Missouri since this started in open enrollment. So I think that the insurance companies are being responsive, but maybe a little bit slower just because there's so much volume coming through.
Jeremy, seeing it the same way?
I am. A lot of the folks that we're talking to on the insurance company call centers, they're getting better at every day, just like we are. And they have an economic incentive here to help people understand their benefits, understand how all this works. And generally speaking, I would echo Nancy's comments that they are generally very helpful.
Well, let's take another break now, and then we'll come down the home stretch. We have a number of calls. I want to get to those and have a few other questions myself for Professor Sydney Watson of St. Louis University, Nancy Kelly, the Director of Engagement and Advocacy with the St. Louis Effort for AIDS, and Jeremy Malarski, a Navigator Program Manager with Primaris. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation about the Affordable Care Act and the things you need to know before the March 31st deadline for applying for coverage at the state or federal exchanges. Let's go right to the phones and bring in Ellen calling from Richmond Heights. Ellen, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi, Don. My question has to do, I have a 22-year-old daughter, and we claim her on our taxes. And I was wondering, if she applies for the Affordable Care Act, would her income, she does have a job, would it be based on our income or her income?
I don't know, but I have some people here I hope do. Nancy?
Sure, we can have Jeremy chime in as well. But the way that the process is set up is really following through taxes. And so whoever is claimed as a dependent is going to have to follow that. And so unless she is filing her own taxes, she would have to report her family's income, which would be through her parents. And so she certainly could still access health insurance through the exchange, but it would impact the level of tax credits. Jeremy, do you have something more to add?
Yeah, it is, as you say, all about the tax household. So the system looks at two things. It looks at the household adjusted gross income, or more specifically, modified adjusted gross income, calculates the based on that, based on the family size and that income, how much in assistance the family may qualify for, and then it looks at who's covered. So whether the 22-year-old Ellen's daughter's income is going to be counted or not depends upon whether her income as a dependent is high enough for that to be counted in the household income. But it's going to look at that.
But Sydney, if she's a dependent, and she's 22, she can remain on her parents' policy until she's 26. Is that the age?
Yes, yeah. If her parents have a health insurance policy that covers dependents. But we do know that there are some young people whose parents don't have insurance at this point. So, you know, this question of, you know, how you want to file your taxes affects your tax liability now. It also impacts what you may be paying for your health insurance going forward.
But if those parents do apply for insurance under the Affordable Care Act, they can fold their daughter in then if they choose to.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
In addition to that, they would not have to apply. She can apply, but she would have to report the income. So it's not like the whole family has to go through the marketplace. Say the parents do have some insurance, they can keep that insurance, and she can go in by herself.
By the way, for people who have private insurance, totally away from the whole Affordable Care Act thing now, do they have the same privilege of keeping their dependent children on until age 26, and the pre-existing condition element remain for them as well, even though they don't have an insurance policy under the Affordable Care Act?
Yes, those kind of global aspects of the Affordable Care Act apply to all of the plans that are offered. There are a few exceptions that are grandfathered that are kind of being phased out. But over 80% of people in the United States get their health insurance through either an employer or through a governmental program such as Medicare or the VA, something like that. And so we are talking about a smaller segment of the population that are looking for insurance, but the vast majority of people are able to keep the coverage they've had through their employer, and actually it's enhanced because there are those factors such as no pre-existing condition, denial, no lifetime limits on coverage, those type of things.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that confuses me is the issue of income and the various strata, if you will, of that trigger various things to happen. Sydney, could you get us going on that and kind of break that down for us in a way that might be easier for most of us to understand the various income categories?
Yeah, well, the income you look at is your modified adjusted gross income, and that's that number for most of us at the bottom of our income tax form, on that page one if you use the longer form. So it's a quick number to find, and you can look back to last year. You also then can estimate any changes this year. And then these premium tax credits are generally available if you're single for someone earning between $11,500 a year up to almost $46,000 a year. For a family of four, those numbers at the bottom are about $23,500 a year up to a little over $94,000 a year. If you translate that, that's from the poverty level up to four times the poverty level.
Where is the best place people can go to sort this out and go over what you just went over here, Sydney?
I think the easiest way, if you are comfortable with a computer and have access to broadband service, is to go to healthcare.gov. You can type in your estimated income from last year's income tax return or what you anticipate on this year's return, and it will show you the numbers. The math is pretty complicated to do, but what healthcare.gov is shows you what that translates into for your premium payments. The second place I'd send people to are to navigators and certified application counselors like Nancy and Jeremy and these 400 organizations we have throughout the state that will sit down with you and work it through.
Nancy, your organization is one of those, correct? But you indicated earlier that it takes about an hour to go through this process. Is this online or on the phone or both?
When someone makes an appointment with our certified application counselors, they'll sit down. We do have computers, so we are mobile. So if you don't have that, that's okay. And we do it online. Occasionally, there's a phone call involved because there is a call center, which we can also access for help if there's a question that arises along the way. I know Jeremy and his group are set up similar to that. And in fact, there are assisters all around the state. And the best way to find one is to go to the website of covermissouri.org. And if you scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, there's a Find Help Near You. And there's a listing there by zip code, and you can see who's close to you that you feel like you can hook up with.
Sounds pretty easy. Jeremy, go ahead.
I would also echo Nancy's comments that the covermissouri.org, not only can they help you find an assister near you, there's also an events page, I believe, on that website that lists sign-up events, enrollment events that might be closer to your location for you to get help.
That's covermissouri.org, and let me assure our audience that we'll put a link to that website on our website at sdlpublicradio.org. Emails here. A question from Eileen. My doctor won't accept Obamacare, and I'm wondering whether doctors are allowed to do this and whether it's becoming a problem for people getting care. Nancy, I'll throw that your way.
Well, you know, just bottom line, the health coverage and health insurance is a complicated world. It always has been. So certain medical providers accept certain coverage, certain companies, and probably the best thing to do is speak with the doctor, speak with the office manager there, explain the concern, because doctors can go in and out of networks depending on who they're associated with and who they have contracts with, frankly.
Mm-hmm. And remember, as Nancy said earlier, there is no plan called Obamacare. Here in Missouri, the policies you purchase are offered either by Coventry or by Anthem, Blue Cross Blue Shield, and the question is whether your doctor participates in those plans. Coventry has some less expensive policies that have fewer physicians and hospitals, and other more expensive policies that have more hospitals and more physicians. Anthem has the same kind of choice. So it's really important to figure out which private plans your physician participates in.
I have the feeling, Sydney, that you would just assume that the term Obamacare had never been put into the mix. And we all know why. That it was a political thing. But it's in such wide use now that that's the term people are using.
Yeah, it became a political term. What I didn't anticipate was this confusion that there was a plan rather than a description of the law. And I do think that has caused some real confusion at the consumer level.
What's interesting is when they take polls, they find people are accepting of the Affordable Care Act, but not so much so with Obamacare. Right. Let's go back to the email from David. He is unemployed, doesn't qualify for a tax subsidy because Missouri has an expanded Medicaid, I think he meant there. He wants to know if he'll be penalized for not getting insurance.
No.
Absolutely not. That is the worst myth. No, the mandate is for people who have access to affordable insurance and decline it. It is not for people who don't have access to affordable insurance. If you are in the so-called Medicaid coverage gap, in other words, you're in the perverse situation that you earn under the poverty level, and because you were in a non-expansion state, you don't have access to Medicaid, you do not face the penalty. No, that is absolutely false.
Go ahead, Nancy.
And it is a financial penalty. That's another story that's out there, is there's some wild things about getting thrown in jail and who knows what else. It is a financial penalty only. There's no other type of penalty that may be applied because you did not purchase insurance.
What about exceptions, Sydney? People, you lose your job between, and you're insured now by your employer. You lose your job between now and November. Are you out of luck until November?
In terms of a penalty, in terms of being able to sign up?
Yeah.
We talked about, you know, the open enrollment period, and outside the open enrollment period, if you have what's called a qualifying life event, you're able to sign up. And those are things like losing your employer-sponsored health insurance, getting a divorce and losing your coverage because of that, having a baby, a new dependent who needs coverage. So there are a number of reasons you can sign up between these open enrollment periods. Mm-hmm. One reason, but be careful, it's not getting sick or getting hit by a bus or getting pregnant. So try to sign up by March 31st if you are able to sign up now, if you do not have health insurance now.
We are apparently getting a number of calls and inquiries from people who maybe have been confused a little earlier when we talked about the $95 penalty as opposed to one that could be many, many hundreds or even thousands of dollars. Sydney, very quickly, could you just clarify that once again?
The penalty on next year's income taxes, not this year, but the income tax returns will be filing in 2014. The penalty is either $95 or 1% of your income, whichever is higher per adult in the family.
And if you're hearing figures, such as the case on the radio this morning, of many, many thousands of dollars, that's probably talking about an income category that most of us will never achieve, right?
Right. And it's also prorated by month. So if you have health insurance coverage for most of the year or part of the year, it will be less than, you know, that yearly amount.
Right. And it's important also to know the penalty is for if you go without insurance for 3 months or more in the year. So if you lose your job and you find another one in a month, and you get coverage through there, that is not a problem for you.
Okay, well, that's good news. I'll remind our audience that you are listening to St. Louis on the Air. Jeremy, a few minutes ago, you used an interesting word with regard to what's going on in some cases, and that is the word myth. What other kinds of myths are out there do you think people need to know about?
Well, the biggest one is what's been discussed on the show earlier, that so-called Obamacare is government insurance. It is not. It is a government platform where private insurers who make a profit sell private policies to people, and approximately 6 in 10 Missourians who are uninsured, don't have access to affordable insurance, can buy it and get financial help in doing so. The other myth, the one is also one we just discussed, which is that there's going to be an obscene penalty for everybody who doesn't sign up. Not true. It is for people who, again, have access to affordable insurance and decline it. The folks that are in who are below the poverty level and don't otherwise have access to Medicaid, they are not susceptible to it. Another big myth is that organizations like Nancy and mine and those in the Covered Missouri Coalition are villains who are out to steal people's personal information. We do not keep your personal information. It is used for verification only for your application. In other words, everybody who is getting financial assistance or buying plans on the marketplace, they had to be in the country legally, not either through a green card or through actual citizenship. We do not keep your personal information. We do not sell your personal information. We are educators only. We don't even sell the policies per se. We're there to show you your options and explain them to you.
Nancy, any myths that you could add in a minute?
Well, yeah, I would underscore what Jeremy said. It's so important for people to understand that all of the people we're talking about, Navigator Certified Application Counselors, are certified through the federal government and then licensed in the state of Missouri. And we work within agencies. There's a lot of oversight. There are a lot of guidelines in place to keep information confidential. And honestly, all we keep is a consent form that you said it was okay to talk with you. That's it.
Right. English, non-English speaking people have any problem working with the navigators very quickly?
International Institute and other entities are helping people that speak other languages than English.
Sydney Watson, put a bottom line on this. What do you want the takeaway to be?
We have 19 days left to go and a lot of new choices out there and a lot of good help available for people to find out what best meets their needs and their pocketbooks.
All right, 19 days to go. That's the deadline for signing up for insurance under the Affordable Care Act. I want to thank you so much, Nancy Kelly, for being with us. It's been a pleasure. Sydney Watson, always great to see you. And Jeremy Malarski, thank you so much for being with us from Columbia.
Thank you, Don.
Great talking to you all.
Thank you.
Tomorrow in St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with St. Louis and Thomas O'Toole, the new leader of the U.S. Golf Association, the governing body that produces and interprets the rules of the game for all levels. We'll talk about efforts to introduce golf to underserved communities, and we'll talk with two of the area's top amateur golfers and their roles in international competition, among other topics. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.